Hey, my quick talk friends. How the heck are ya? Josh here. I'm sick. I got a stuffy nose. I've been coughing. It's been a disaster. And I have not released a podcast episode in like a month. And I have never done that since I started the podcast. It's been a crazy, crazy time. Everything's cool. Tons of great podcasts are on the docket and in the pipe and are going to be coming to you for the whole year. Just needed to have a little breather to recalibrate. Had a lot of things going on. I traveled and was speaking and doing some other things. So just want to give you an update there to stay excited. Lots of good stuff coming. And I also wanted to let you know about my buddy Joe Kowalski has a huge webinar on Thursday of this week, unveiling the new version of Service Monster, right? So if you have a service company, you need to look at Service Monster, and I'm not an affiliate of it or anything like that. I'm a huge supporter of the Customer Factor, and all the CRMs are really good. Service Autopilot's really good, but I just wanted to let you know that this webinar is happening because I've seen this product, and I got a demo of it early on, and it's unbelievable. It does things, honestly, I've never seen any CRM do. And it's really, really good. So I'll put a link in the show notes so that you can go check it out. Or you can go to Service Monster's website. Just Google it and sign up for the webinar. It's free. You got it. You got to check it out. I'm just telling you. I just wanted to give my buddy Joe a good plug because it's gonna be a big deal. So in today's episode, I talked to John Rulin. He's amazing. This guy wrote a book called Giftology. He has this huge company, and they're professional gift givers. It's really awesome. You're not gonna believe some of the nuggets he shares in his story. And they do millions of dollars for these huge corporate clients, specializing in gift giving. It's a crazy weird topic. I think you're really gonna like it. I'll be talking to y'all very soon a lot more. Let's get going with it.
Welcome to the Quick Talk Podcast with Joshua Latimer, where we discuss business, life, family, faith, struggle, fire, pain, and ultimately winning.
It's time to take massive action. Look, I can't work harder on your life or business than you do.
It's ultimately all on you.
You know, God created all the food the birds would ever need, but he doesn't put it in their nest. You gotta go get it.
10 out of 10 people die. So how about doing something today that actually matters while you still can? Hey, everybody. Josh here with the Quick Talk Podcast. Thank you so much for hanging out with me today and my hopefully soon-to-be good buddy, John Rulin. Now, I heard John, he's all over the place on the interwebs. People are interviewing him. He's on TV. He was on Fox News. Like, he's interesting. He has a story to tell. And he is the author of a book called Giftology. But more than that, and I'll let him unpack his history, he is a person who practices the art of relationship marketing. He triggers what I call the gratitude effect, this whole idea that we need to love on our customers better. We need to love on our employees better, any key relationship, even our family and our spouse. How intentional are we in our life in these areas, and how big of a deal is it if we drop the ball? So, John, I know you're very busy. You're crushing life right now. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Josh, thanks for having me. This is I'm excited. I love your energy.
I have tons of energy and I'm very, very passionate, especially about this topic. So sometimes I talk about boring business systems and all that because they're important. But I've been really deep on this whole relationship marketing gratitude effect. How do I get small businesses to move the needle, move revenues through being intentional with relationships? And it's kind of a tricky thing. I think one of the questions that people have is how can you measure the ROI when you do relationship marketing the right way, which means there's no strings attached. You're just genuinely loving on people. A lot of business owners can't wrap their head around that. What say you?
Yeah, well, I think that any size business, any industry, they understand that relationships matter. Like if at a core level, most people believe that. They say relationships are important. And, you know, one of my mentors, Matthew Kelly, talks about, you know, taking time, you know, the carefree timelessness with relationships. That's how they thrive. And so a lot of people gravitate towards, you know, dinners and golf and ball games. Like, you know, for the last hundreds or even thousands of years, people go break bread with each other. I mean, the Last Supper, for crying out loud, was a meal with food and wine and bread. And so we all know that like spending time and investing in relationships matter. And it is difficult. Like when you take somebody out to a nice dinner and a bottle of wine and it costs you $500, like what's your return? Well, you know that like you spend time with people, like the relationships thrive. And I think that with gratitude and, you know, handwritten thank you notes and gifts and all those other things that are more tangible, they're also very difficult to measure. But I think if you look at, you know, any business that's really thriving in 2016, they're doing things differently. They're connecting with people at a deeper level because there's so much noise. And what we found, I mean, I invest, you know, $250,000 a year into gifts, into clients, prospects, whatever else. And I can tell you that each year our business continues to grow, you know, a lot more than the year before, not only on the top line, which is important, but the bottom line, like our actual profits. And so it didn't start out that way. We started out when I was in college 16 years ago, and I would invest $100 or $200 or $300 in a Cutco carving set or whatever else, which at the time might as well have been $50,000 because it was a big deal. But because of that, we'd get a meeting or a deal or an opportunity. And sometimes that $200 would bear nothing. And other times that $200 would turn into a $2,000 deal, which, you know, that's a, you know, at least a 10X on the top line. And sometimes it would turn into a $20,000 deal, which when you're selling knives, $20,000 in knives, you know, the order form wasn't big enough to write the order up. And people, like, they actually thought it was a fraud. They thought it was a fake order. Like, I was trying to buy it and sell it on eBay. The company wouldn't process the order, Cutco. And so what I can say is that if you look at relationships with a long-term mindset of at least 3 years, I try to view relationships. Dan Martell is a friend and a client. And he said, if you go into relationships looking at them as a 50-year you know, milestone, like not 5 minutes or 15 minutes or 15 years, but 50 years. It's amazing when you plant seeds well, over time, things just start to germinate and, you know, things, you know, whether you believe in a God or not, like the world is wired in a certain way that when you plant things and you kind of reap what you sow over time.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So good. And I agree. And I'm a Christian. I'm pretty transparent about that. This isn't like a faith-based show, but it's funny. I use this phrase sometimes called biblical mechanics. And this is one of those areas where it just is this way. Okay. Whether you believe or not, it just works like this. When you invest in the long term, when you give and you give and you give, things are reciprocated to you. It's just truth. And that's one of the reasons I don't get a lot of pushback from people on the concept that, hey, do you think it would help your business if you did a better job loving on your most valuable asset, like all of your customers? Like, would that help you? Everyone agrees yes. We know it intrinsically, but we still don't, you know, execute on it. Or if we do execute, it's always attached to a transaction. Like somebody paid you money, and so then you trigger something like, oh, thank you for paying us money. Or they give you a referral, and you say, here's a Starbucks gift card. You know, thank you so much for the referral. And is that better than nothing? I get probably for sure. But you talk about planned randomness. I'm curious to have you dig into that a little bit.
Yeah, I think that whether you're a financial service firm or whether you clean windows or whether you make widgets, you know, you get a referral from somebody. Oftentimes it can mean like $10,000 in business, $2,000 in business. Sometimes it's even, you know, millions of dollars in business. You know, if you're in financial services, somebody might bring over $1 million to have that money invested with you. And so it feels very transactional and very kind of tit for tat, like, hey, I just got $2,000. Here's a $20 Starbucks gift card, or hey, here's a bottle of wine that costs $30. It feels like, hey, I just sent you $30,000 in business and you send me $30. Like, that doesn't feel very good. But if out of nowhere something shows up and you're just like, hey, I just love working with you, I appreciate the relationship. You know, I'm not a big fan of gift cards because they're consumed and forgotten about or lost and used. And I like more tangible long-term things. But if something just showed up out of the blue as a just because of who you are in the relationship, all of a sudden it feels like the relationship matters. And it's kind of like, I don't care whether you're a billionaire and you're Mark Cuban or whether, you know, you're making 50 grand a year. Like, we all like to be treated VIP and be treated special and different and as an individual. And when something shows up as a just because, it's amazing how that changes versus, oh, I'm getting this because of a referral. So even though we own a gifting company, we don't send a single gift for referrals. Somebody sends us a referral, I'll send them a really nice handwritten thank you note, appreciate it and acknowledge it. But my gifts show up usually 3 to 4 times a year. to our top 250 relationships, but they'll show up at random times. Like I as a gifting company, this is heresy. Like we've been called the Grinch that wants to kill Christmas because I don't send one gift between Thanksgiving and Christmas. So most people are like, oh, you must be really dead right now because it's January. And I'm like, actually, we're crushing it. Like between Thanksgiving and Christmas, I don't send one gift, and I push my clients not to send a gift there either. They should be sending gifts at, you know, in the middle of February around Valentine's Day, because when's the last time you got a cool corporate gift, you know, a week before Valentine's Day? Like most people are like, never.
Yeah.
And so that shows up and you're like, hey, I just love working with you. And a gift shows up around Valentine's Day. Like we've had some of our clients, I'm talking some big, like heavy hitters, get the gift. It has nothing about me on it. It has their last name on it, or their family name, or maybe their wife's name. And they take the gift home to their wife and use it as their Valentine's Day gift because it's that nice and that thoughtful. and the wife is unsuspecting because they're like, they're not expecting a corporate gift to show up that's all personalized around Valentine's Day. But because of that planned randomness, now all of a sudden you take even an average gift and it means a lot more because it's not tied to anything.
Oh yeah. And you know, re-gifting, when someone re-gifts what you send them, that's traditionally a bad thing. But if they re-gift it to their wife, that means you won. That means you're crushing it with your gift. That is hilarious.
Game
I love
over.
That. And so you give $250,000 away or in your budget, that's what's allocated, just to randomly nurture relationships. So I'm imagining, I mean, you guys are a private company or whatever, but wouldn't like a traditional, you know, venture cap guy or someone try to look at that business model and just their brain would explode trying to justify measuring the, like, how do you put that on a KPI dashboard? Like, nah, we're just going to do this. And they're like, okay, well, where's, you know, how many clicks did we get from that spend and how many, you can't, is that the reason?
It doesn't work that way.
Right.
Yeah. It doesn't work that way. Yeah. I think that we would point to, we're a small Midwest company and we have the Chicago Cubs, the Cleveland Indians, the San Antonio Spurs, the Orlando Magic, the Jacksonville Jaguars, Morgan Stanley. We have some of the biggest companies and brands in the world as clients. And that doesn't happen on accident. And if you know, the Bible says in Proverbs that, you know, that a gift ushers you into the presence of kings. Well, you want to be in the presence of kings, like in your industry or in your world, in your town, in your city, in your industry. Like the way that we found is that if you show generosity and you gift like a king, you get treated like a king. And if most people will try to compete with their industry and they'll spend more on advertising. I spent 2% more, 5% more than on you than advertising. Well, that just becomes noise. Like incremental spending against your competitor and in an industry where everybody's doing that, it's just like, it's the difference between the red ocean and the blue ocean. The books, the blue ocean strategy. Well, I want to play in an ocean where nobody's playing. So when I spend money, like when I spend on a business card, I spend $3 on my business cards. They're made out of metal because most people spend 5 cents and they think that they're getting fancy when they spend 10 cents. Right. Well, I'm spending 30 times more than them. So when I hand out a business card, which, you know, you don't have to do it with your business card, but I felt like that was an area where everybody went cheap. And so where everybody goes cheap, I go expensive. And where everybody's going expensive, I don't even compete. I cut it out altogether. Because unless I can go 10 notches above where somebody's at, I don't even want to go there. Because otherwise, it's just I'm now one of 1,000 people all shouting basically the same thing and having a pissing match. It's like trade shows. Like if I go to a trade show, I want to be on the stage because I don't want to be one of the 1,000 vendors that, oh, my banner is bigger than your banner. Like, and I spent $50,000 for that. Well, who cares? Like, my tchotchke is better than your tchotchke. Like, nobody remembers any of that. My dinner is better than your dinner. Nobody remembers the dinners. They're all, half of them are drunk out of their mind the next day, and they don't even, like, they're under the next dinner and the next round of drinks. So I feel like the reason that we spend that in the KPI is, well, we started at $5,000 invested there, and we're like, wow, the people that we sent things to, they really noticed. And I got, you know, invited to Nike's headquarters to take a tour because I gifted somebody that I met at a Final Four game from Nike a gift that she took something off of her wall that was a Jordan iconic piece and hung up the piece that I sent her. That was expensive, but it made an impact. And so over 16 years of doing this, you just start to see a pattern of, wow, I'm getting access to people I really have no business getting access to. And I'm getting opportunities that I'm like pinch me. Like, I'm a farm boy from Ohio. I really shouldn't be, you know, hanging out in the pit crew, you know, at a NASCAR race, because that's you know, like, because I'm not Kellogg's or Kraft, but because I gifted that way, it opened those kind of doors.
It's amazing. It's seriously amazing. And I was so excited to talk with you, because right after I heard one of your interviews and was introduced to your book, Giftology, I actually put immediately into practice what you had been talking about in my business. So I have some information products I sell. I do training online. And then I have a software tool that, you know, we talked about briefly that kind of does this Giftology thing in a smaller way for local businesses. But what I did was I had a best-selling author on my podcast, and, you know, I really connected with them. I liked them. And I thought, you know, I really want to have a relationship long-term here. I don't have like, I don't need anything from this person, but I'm going to just gift this person in a really personalized way. And what I did, yep. no one knows this, but I had a little miniature handmade guitar made, because I had read on his about page that he plays the guitar as a hobby, but I had the cover of his book actually built like onto the body of the guitar, and it was like custom painted. It was like $400 for this gift.
Yes.
And I did it like immediately after we did the interview. I like rushed it. I like blew up the guitar guy. I'm like, make this right now, yesterday, get it done, make it perfect. And then we overnight it to him. And he's like, holy crap. And there's these pictures of him playing it. And I didn't have any strings attached. I just felt inspired. I spent $400. Who knows what will come of that? And I think the reason that that'll work is because I'm not expecting necessarily anything to come out of it. Isn't that the right way to look at it?
1,000%. Yeah. I mean, it's amazing how when you plant those seeds, like all of a sudden 5 or 10 years later, like when you have that kind of long-term mindset, all of a sudden like – you know, like you may have not have known 10 years ago that you're going to have a podcast, but somebody that you planted a seed with 10 years ago might be the perfect podcast guest because now they're a best-selling author. And so you don't know what's going to come, you know, down the pike. I mean, business changes so fast, and opportunities and technologies and media and it's a big world, but it's also a small world. And so, you know, I found that you treat people well. It's not that you should go into debt to give gifts and be like reckless, but I think that most people they hold back. And so they're afraid to look silly, or they're afraid to invest money in a way that feels uncomfortable. They'll blow money on, you know, beer and wine and bar tabs and trade shows and whatever else. And they'll say, oh, well, I'm just it's relationship building, entertainment budget, whatever. But they're not necessarily as aggressive in their testing and in their pursuit of showing gratitude and appreciation, yes, especially with gifting. And I feel like if they would just start to try it, you know, budget $1,000, you know, maybe it's $1,000 a month, maybe it's $1,000 for the year. But do it well. Don't try to do it for 10,000 people. Do it well with 10 people for a year, mm-hmm, and see what happens. You know, even if only one out of the 10 is blown away and you don't get anything from it, but, you know, you do that for 5 years. I challenge you to do that for 5 years, even with just $1,000, $5,000 investment. I view it like almost like, you know, like I love going to Vegas every once in a while and just putting $100 down and just seeing what happens. Like, put it down and see what happens. Like, most of the time you make a few of those kind of bets, like only one needs to hit to make the other like nine become like rounding errors. Like, yeah, who cares? and so that's my feeling is that, you know, most people hold back. They're not willing to engage. They're not willing to invest there. And because of that, you know, that's the one out of 100 that'll take this message and actually do something with it, that'll really see, you know, that 10x, 100x, 1000x return on investment in their own business and in their own just personal life. If you did this with your own relationships, even,
oh, yeah,
personally, you know, forget the business, like start gifting your spouse and your family this way. You want to talk about head spinning. The ripple effect is, you know, just super powerful.
Yeah, I think we all mean to be a person that behaves like this. Like, we all would kind of idealize ourselves like, yeah, we're thoughtful, we're generous, but you have to be actually really intentional, organized. I mean, if you're spending $250K, I'm sure you have some sort of planning. There's some sort of framework where it's set out in advance so that you actually follow through with it. I think people don't take this seriously enough to make it like a system or to figure it out. Like, you're going to need to randomly love on your wife this year. So let's figure out something right now so you can prepare for it or have a reminder on your phone or something. And then another, yep, another thing I heard you say on the interview you did with Lewis Howes, the School of Greatness guy, is you talked about how people send gifts that are recipient, or they should send recipient-focused gifts, not brand-focused. Like, for example, some companies will, like, get some coffee cups made, like, with their own logo, like ABC Cleaning Company, and they give it to their customer and, like, you're welcome, sweetie. Like no, nobody wants your stupid coffee cup with your logo on it. Like, what's wrong with us? What do you have to say about that?
Well, I think every marketing book on the planet's like, oh, you're going to spend this money. And most of them are written by men. You know, like, hey, you can blend your, you know, it's like a promotional gift. Like, those are two very different things. A gift is not a promotion. And a promotion is not a gift. And most people, like, you never go to a wedding and say, oh, this couple's getting married. Let's get them something really nice. Let's take this Tiffany's vase and, you know, it's compliments of Joshua. Like, can you imagine, like, giving a, you know, the couple, like, with your logo on it or with your name? Like, that would be the – even for the most tacky self-promotional person in the world, you'd never do that in the personal world. But in business, we do that and we call that marketing. And the other person, because they're polite, especially in our politically correct, you know, world, they'll say thank you if it's in person, or maybe you get a text message acknowledging it. But nobody's like – oh my gosh, like, I've never gotten a polo shirt before with a logo the size of a softball. I'm so excited. You know, especially a decision maker or a leader of a company, like, they're going to wash the car in that at best, or use it to wash the car, or like their dogs are going to use it in their bedding. But nobody's going to be like, wow, this is amazing, because you're trying to take and turn them into a billboard for you. Whereas if you took a really nice Under Armour shirt – now, I'm not a big fan of apparel because everybody gives apparel. But if you're going to give a polo shirt, give a, you know, $60 or $80 or $100 polo shirt and put their logo on it of the company that they own, or, you know, their initials on the inside of the tag, or make it all about them. And in doing so, they're way more likely to use it. And if it's a nice enough gift – like, if I gave you a Rolex, Josh, would you ever – do I need to put my logo on it, or will you remember where it came from?
Oh, baby, like, John. Yeah, I'll send you the address afterwards. I would totally remember. Well, you call it an artifact, right? This is a good segue into that. You use the word artifact. Tell us what you mean by that.
Well, a gift, if it's done well and it lasts, you know, and if it lasts decades – and it's thoughtful and personal and unique to them and their family, and it has their wife's name on it or their family name on it. Like, there should be an artifact element. Like, you think about an artifact as something that, you know, is lasting, and that it kind of represents the relationship and the culture, or, you know, whatever it is. And so, you know, we've seen, you know, where people give gifts like the knives or whatever else, where they'll have them 10, 15, 20 years later. And what's interesting is every time they use it, even though there's no logo on it, there's a subconscious or even sometimes conscious reminder. Like, around Christmas, I had, like, the CFO of a pretty prominent real estate investment firm out of Portland that sent me a note and then put a thing on Facebook saying, John, like, I laugh every time I use these freaking knives, because every time I use them, I think of you. And it was like Christmas Eve. He's posting this about me. And it was because the item itself was personalized to him, his wife. They were using it in the very intimate family situations and setting, which is usually food in the kitchen and the, you know, holidays or celebrating and food and wine or whatever else. And so it became an artifact of the relationship. And then, you know, you think about the things that, you know, if your house was on fire, you know, what would you grab, or what would you really want to save? And it's usually the artifacts. It's things that are representative of a key relationship. Maybe it's pictures. Maybe if your father or mother served in the war, and it's a flag. It's those handful of things that really have some significant meaning. And so when we give a gift, or when we help our clients give gifts to their clients or employees or prospects, we think about, like, what would be something that would still be around that would be really meaningful and useful and significant, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 years from now, that maybe even they would pass down to a future generation, to their kids or grandkids. And when you gift with that kind of thought behind it, you can't help but leave a trail of, like, people that are, like, they can't help but think of you, because most people want to do business with other people, and you're the companies that you're helping, whether you're $1 million company or a $10 billion company, people do business with people. And one of the key factors in doing business is you have to be top of mind. Like you have to be memorable in some sort of way. So when they have a need for a product or service, you're the first person in company to come to mind because there's 1,000 people that do what you do in most cases.
Yeah. Didn't you guys do a gift one time, speaking of saying memorable and personalized, for a sports team? On one of your interviews, you were talking about how you took I can't remember if it was like the Cubs or somebody, but you to the season ticket holders, you built them a Bluetooth speaker, but it was built out of the wood from the old bleachers at the something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So it took us 7 years to land this deal with the Cubs of gifting over, many, many years and different people and different, decision makers and influencers and whatever else. But they reached out to us and said, John, we're redoing Wrigley Field, which is one of the most iconic structures in the world. And we have this old wood from the locker room and it's kind of falling apart, but we want to do something cool with it. And we don't want it to be like a plaque hanging on the wall. Like everybody has too much crap hanging on the wall to begin with. We want it to be useful, but we want to incorporate the wood. And so we sourced this boutique speaker line called LSTN. They help restore hearing for every pair of speakers or headphones that they sell. And they normally make things out of reclaimed wood, but they're like, John, we can't use this wood. So we had to go to our own custom manufacturer, rebuild the wood, and we made 400 Bluetooth speakers that were numbered 1 through 400 for the sponsors, suite owners, and some of the most important people for Wrigley. And then they gave them out. And these are people that are making 6, 7, 8 figures a year, so they can afford what they want. But they were blown away because it was something that was useful and it was a piece of history. And one of the brands we're building right now is called Modern Artifact. And it's the idea of taking something that's modern and useful, but the artifact element and history and building that together, that's one of the ways that you have, you create a killer, memorable gifting experiences by giving them something that they can't get anywhere else that they'll use, but that has that element of uniqueness and specialness to it.
It's just incredible. And there's no objection to this. How do we not know? Why aren't we all doing this? That's my thing. And before we get, wrapping up the interview, I wanted to circle back, which we should have talked about in the beginning, about two things. Number one, you pay to have your employees' homes cleaned every 2 weeks. I think that's amazing, super generous, and it kind of decommoditizes you as an employer. How they can't compare that feature of working with you to some other, company because it doesn't exist. It separates you. And then your background, your history in Ohio, you're networked with a lot of really big deal people. I mean, they're just people, but they're really high level and you can't get to these people. What's it like going from that journey of small town kid? Just give us that history and then speak about why it's important to loving your employees like you do.
Yeah, well, I think that we talked about at the beginning, relationships matter, and you can't expect to treat all of your client relationships well unless you treat your own internal. It's an internal thing before it's an external thing. And so our view is you can't be the Ritz-Carlton on the outside and be McDonald's on the inside. It doesn't work. You're not going to give great world-class customer service by treating your people like crap and expecting them to treat your clients like gold. So one of the things, we have a lot of working moms. They're, they have husbands and kids and, they work full time. And so one of the things we said that, what would our employees want that they wouldn't do for themselves that would make their life easier and better? And one of the things we figured out was, just by asking ourselves that question was, they don't have time to clean and laundry and all that kind of stuff. So what if we paid to have their house clean? If you gave them the option of money or that, they take the money and they go spend it on bills or Christmas presents or whatever else. But by not making it an option and it's just a part of the deal, it costs us a couple $1,000s per employee per year. But it gives us, number one, the husbands love it because their wives are less stressed. Their family operates better. The employees are better. And it gives us $20,000-$30,000 worth of value. We don't lose employees. It's something that they brag about. So new employees are before they even come in for an interview, they've heard about from their friends, hey, if you get hired, this is one of the perks. They're seriously? We even have, employees' parents that are doctors and whatever else bragging to their friends, hey, my daughter got a job at this company. This is what they do. And guess what? They have a house cleaner. And it just becomes this – it becomes a braggable opportunity and situation. And we didn't know that it was going to be that. It was just the core basic question of how can we make our employees' lives better and treat them the way that we want them to treat our clients. And it's one of those things where we've now taken it a step further and said, you know, I know that like when I go out for date night with my wife, like one of the hassles is a babysitter and the cost of the babysitter. And so we're starting to incorporate mandatory, you know, that if they want it, like this is the only way that the money is going to be used is for a babysitter and for date night, movie, dinner, and babysitter all on us multiple times throughout the year for all of our employees. And so now they don't have the excuse of, well, I can't go out for date night because the babysitter's too expensive or dinner's too expensive or the movie. And, you know, it adds up, but it's something that we're offering to our employees. We're starting out at once a quarter. They have to, you know, if they want it, the perk's there. If they don't want it, then they don't get the cash. But we feel like, you know, like in order for our employees to have healthy lives, they have to have healthy relationships at home because they're not just employees, they're people. And that's one of the things that we feel like is, you know, it's important for my business partner and I to have those times with our wives. And we feel like it's something that we want to inspire and encourage our employees to do as well.
Oh, that's why I feel such a kindred spirit with you. Not to be corny or cheesy is, you know, even when I had my cleaning company, we had like 25 employees somewhere around there when we sold it. I did what you just described back then, and I hadn't thought of it as anything other than normal. And I was trying to find a way to take my staff and take their compensation package. Not every single staff had the same thing, but you know, the key leaders and things and the leadership team. And I would figure out, you know, okay, if we're going to pay them X amount of dollars per year, I want to back off a little bit on that total number, and I want to redistribute the remaining budget and make them consume things that make their life better. For example, we'd, you know, force them to take, you know, massage gift certificates, or we'd have them book hotel rooms. They'd book hotel rooms. They'd do all kinds of different family-focused stuff. They had kind of things they could select, or they could schedule, you know, 3 long weekends off a year in a service company. That's like a huge thing. And the reason we did that was they couldn't consume it. Like, if I give them cash, it's going to their cell phone bill. It's going to their utility bill. They're going to extract so much more value on a personal level when they're like eating dinner with their wife and they get a free dinner and a babysitter and everything, and they're not stressed about that. Like, that is so massive. You could create a whole movement around that idea. I think it's amazing. So, small town kid from Ohio, were you the first big entrepreneur in your family? I mean, you have these 7-figure businesses, you're doing all this cool stuff. Did you see this happening to you young, or have you always been very driven?
Well, I grew up poor on a farm milking goats, so I figured out very early on what I didn't want to do the rest of my life. That's kind of the simple answer on kind of my beginnings. But my mom was one of 13 kids. I have 61 first cousins, so I come from a massive family. My grandfather on my mom's side, even though he kind of operated very conservatively and almost miserly and kind of like a you know, he'd have the ripped Dickies pants on and whatever else. But I also kind of heard that he had paid cash for his Lincoln, and he had a 12-acre lake that he fished on. And I spent time with him, and he had a successful business. But I didn't really – like, he didn't show it in any way, shape, or form with monetary things. So I kind of realized through my grandparents, actually on both sides, that entrepreneurship, or that wasn't really a word 30 years ago. It was just like, yeah, if you had a small business, or, you know, you worked for yourself. But I realized that was possible. I thought it was because I got good grades and I kind of was an overachiever and a pleaser. I was going to go be a doctor. That was kind of like my way of getting out of being poor.
That was you but I was really doing goats was to become a doctor.
Go from goats to from milking goats to, you know, to, you know, cutting on people, I guess. But I realized when I interned with Cutco to pay for college, one, I had a mentor who was super generous, and I saw him just attract referrals like it was like his job, just automatically because of how generous he was. So I started to parlay that into Cutco's success and realized, like, I don't really want to be a doctor. I was going because of the notoriety and to go make money. And, you know, like, I like talking to people, but I don't necessarily need to go like to school for 8 years and go into $500,000 in debt just to, like, this business thing is working out pretty well. And nobody really seems to be talking about this whole gifting and gratitude as a competitive advantage. And so when I graduated from undergrad, I just decided I'm going to give it a couple more years to see if this business will grow. And it did, you know, it wasn't like magic overnight, but, you know, over the course of the last 16 years of pouring into it, and I sold half the business about 8 years ago, which was an amazing decision because I'm not a finance and operations guy. Like, I'm a vision relationship person. And we've invested in other businesses, and some things have worked, some things have crashed and burned. But in general, yeah, it started out in Ohio, very, you know, meager beginnings. And even now we're a small company, but we play with whales, and the company is very profitable, and you know, we have plans to continue to grow it and invest in other businesses and continue to do what we do. But the goal isn't necessarily to grow into like a multi, you know, billion-dollar company, but to grow businesses that we really believe in, and that's what we're doing in 2017, and hopefully another 16 years later we'll be doing, you know, more of the same.
It's amazing. Thank you so much for investing, you know, in this interview and giving of your time. Super, super appreciate it. This will be one of the most unique interviews I've done. It's a little bit off the beaten norm. I think people are going to love this interview. I super appreciate it. How can people get your book, Giftology? Should they just do Amazon? Is there a website for it?
Yeah. So they go to Amazon. It's on Audible, which is obviously Amazon owns. It's on the Kindle version. We did also create a for your tribe and kind of listeners. People sometimes want to do gifting on their own, but they don't even know where to start. It's kind of like when I take my kids to bowl, they just need bumper bowling. They just need something to keep out of the gutter. And so we created a PDF that's kind of the 10 worst gifts to avoid giving. So at least give them something that kind of some parameters. So if you go to giftologybook.com/Josh, you can see the top 10 gifts to avoid giving, and that way you can kind of, you know, your tribe can go do it on their own, and you know, if they want to reach out, they can go to obviously Facebook, Twitter is at Rulin. Rulin Group is the core business, which is the kind of, we call it gift strategy and logistics. So if they want to see the Cubs project or what we do with the Jaguars and D.R. Horton and some of the bigger companies and what we teach on more the strategy side and execution, they can check out rulingroup.com. But yeah, plenty of places to go check out.
Perfect. We'll put all the links in the show notes so you guys can click it easy peasy. Thank you so much. Now, I want to send you a thank you gift for coming on my show, but you're like the most intimidating guy to send a gift to ever because you're the master. Should I even try? What is the point?
I know. My wife hates giving gifts to me because I'm lovingly honest. If something doesn't hit the mark, like I don't want to be that person that's the fake, like, oh, this is so nice. Hey, where'd you get it again? And then like takes it to, you know, to Target or sends it back to Amazon to get your gift card. But yeah, I'm not the easiest person to gift, but I will say like when somebody, I used to make fun of mugs. Like we talked about mugs before. Somebody sent me like it hand delivered me like a $200 mug. That was the nicest, coolest artifact of a piece that I've received in the last year or two. And I now talk about them all the time because I never expected a mug to be one of the coolest gifts I've ever received. So if somebody nails it, I will give them props and shout them from the mountains. But I am kind of a pain in the butt to
gift. Well, I'm still going to make a valiant effort, and I'm scratching. I had written down to mail him a goat, but that's that's not going to work because you were trying to escape the goats. Okay, I'm going to keep working on that, John. Thank you for your time. I hope you have a great 2017. God bless you, my friend.
Thanks so much, Josh.
Hey, thanks for hanging out, friends. And from all of us here at the Quick Talk Podcast team, we hope you loved today's show. We hope that you were inspired to become a doer and not just a listener. Apply what you've heard today in your own business and watch things change for the better. Lastly, remember that all the money in the world can't save your soul. Seek first the kingdom of God, my friends. We'll see you next time.
For more information about the Quick Talk Podcast or Joshua's other businesses, visit our website, quicktalkpodcast.com. Have a blessed day.